Hello there, and welcome to the podcast. It's John Markar here, and I thought I'd just jump in with a very quick but very important message that I wanted to share with you before you delve into this episode of the Driven Chat podcast. This podcast, the Driven Chat podcast, has now come to an end. But don't worry, I'm not going to stop you from listening to this episode or from catching up with the 185 episodes that we've recorded in this format. I just wanted to let you know that if you're looking for our new episodes recorded after December 2023, then you'll need to seek out our new podcast, The Driven Podcast. You can find The Driven Podcast in all the usual podcast platforms, including, chances are, the one that you're listening to this one on right now. So please do enjoy this episode, share it with a friend by all means. But when it's done, don't forget to search for the new podcast, The Driven Podcast, and subscribe to the new format to hear the new stuff. To make life easy, head on over to the Driven website via driven.site. There you will find links through to the new podcast, including links to your preferred podcast platform. And hey, whilst you're there, why not check out everything else we do, including hand-picked automotive news stories, car and bike reviews, video features, and even more. For now, though, I'll let you enjoy this episode, and I will remind you again at the end of the episode, but for the future reference, this message is approximately 1 minute and 30 seconds long. That's 6 clicks on the 15-second skip button. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, I'm John Quirk, and I'm the head of content at GridServe.
Hi, I'm Rob Buckland, the Chief Leasing Officer here at GridServe.
The Driven Chat Podcast, powered by Paramex Digital.
Hello there, and welcome to this week's Driven Chat Podcast. My name is John Markar, and as you've just heard there, I'm joined this week by two guests, one of whom is a voice that you might have just heard before. If you have been a long-term listener of our podcast, and by long-term I mean very long-term, as in you've listened to every single episode, including the first few, then you may remember the voice of Mr. John Quirk, who joined us at the early stages, and I feel absolutely delighted to be back sat in a room with him. Hello, John.
Hey, buddy. All right, pleasure to be here, really. Honestly, it's been a pleasure to sort of see this podcast grow. You've taken it from strength to strength, so it's really good to see you and Amy doing well and hopefully get to see more of you.
That's very kind. Yeah, no, it's really good to see you too. Really, really good to see you. Welcome both of you, Rob and John, to the podcast. I guess we better start by painting the picture of where we are and what this place is, because we are in quite a significant place. Usually we have a variance of methods and areas in which we record these episodes. We've got a little studio space in Coventry, or from time to time we'll go out and explore and get the microphones out in a location, and that's exactly what we've done today. So we are today recording, as you might have guessed from the title of this episode, we're recording from a GridServe charging port. What are we calling this?
GridServe electric forecourt.
Electric forecourt, that's the one. So we are in Norwich, the Norwich electric forecourt, in this beautiful building. It is beautiful. Just to kind of paint a picture for you, dear listener, I've arrived, parked up outside, admittedly not in an electric vehicle, but I've parked up outside to this gorgeous looking glass fronted building with more charge points than I've ever seen in one location, with an array of EVs parked up. Who wants to take the lead on telling me what this place is and in turn what GridServe is?
I guess we can take turns if you want, Rob, but sure. For me, an electric forecourt is all about reimagining the filling station of the future. Mm-hmm. So we know the direction of travel is set around the decarbonisation of transport. So for things like a forecourt, it's about helping communities in these areas. How do we make them feel comfortable about that transition to electric? But also, how do you make them get really excited about the benefits that they could bring as well? Mm-hmm. So, you know, as you say, like one of the main issues that people find with charging so far is the availability of chargers. So at Norwich, I'm trying to think how many there are now. I think there's 36 electric vehicle chargers all right. under here. 22 of those are these 350 kilowatt capable chargers. So that's powerful enough for the latest electric cars to acquire about 100 miles of range in less than 10 minutes. So super fast. Mm. And then you've also got Tesla chargers, you've got AC pedestal chargers, and you've got all the different connector types, which obviously it sounds bewildering, but there are only three real connector types.
Sure.
There's this
yeah.
one called CCS, which is like the dominant one now, CHAdeMO, which is used on a lot of like Japanese vehicles, and then the slightly older vehicles will have used the AC connector.
Mm-hmm.
So we have them all, so we're really trying to be quite sort of democratic in who we can get over to these spaces. The other thing is around accessibility, right? Because, you know, everyone has to make this transition, so it needs to be easy for everybody as well.
Yeah.
So on this site and others across the country where we've got electric forecourts and electric super hubs, you'll find these sort of priority bays, which are super wide bays that are wheelchair accessible. There's drop curbs. The actual paying terminals on these chargers are contactless.
Perfect.
So all you need to do is plug the thing in and tap your card and you're away. So it couldn't be more straightforward, really. And they're the sort of like benefits that we need to try and bring to the masses. And then what's quite special about this forecourt is that there is going to be a bit of a behaviour change. You know, you're charging for sort of tens of minutes when you're stopping one of these forecourts. So we're trying to basically make sure that people can maximise their time when they are here. So at Norwich, for example, we've got like a Costa Coffee.
Mm.
We're recording this podcast in a rentable office pod.
Yeah.
There's an e-bicycle store next door. There's a massive grid serve car leasing showroom on the other side of the building. M&S food. You know, there's just loads of things that people can like do.
It's a post office
chill,
here.
Chat. Mm. There's a post office.
I can't believe
exactly.
there's a post office in this room.
Yeah, so you can get your packages done. And all those little benefits and all those facilities will be different wherever you go in the country because they're kind of dictated by the residents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so every time one of these things is built, it goes into a big community consultation and we effectively ask the community, what do you want this place to do?
Got it.
And basically what you're seeing is the result of that conversation with the local community.
Brilliant. And I think, Jake, you nailed that, man. Like that you literally nailed the description of the Norwich Electric Forecourt. What I would like to add, I suppose, to that is the forecourts bring the confidence for mm-hmm. people to go electric. And I think, you know, we have in sites like this, you know, where you haven't got a driveway to charge your electric car and you can come here and whilst your car's charging and your dwell time can be spent having a nice Costa coffee or posting your parcels or whatever it might be, or even learning about your next EV and the test drives that we offer from here as well. And I suppose from my point of view in the automotive industry, there isn't a place really where you can go and learn about many brands in one place, you know, we've got gurus here on site 7 days a week to answer weird, wonderful questions, myth bust, to educate, to learn, and provide the confidence, and that's what we offer here from Norwich and our other forecourt in Braintree and our soon to be in Gatwick.
Brilliant. Well, I definitely want to pick your brains a little bit later in this conversation about that forecourt aspect of the ability to walk in and, as you say, a very unusual thing, actually, being able to go into one showroom, we'll say in inverted commas, but with multiple car brands, marks. You know, outside I've seen everything from an MG to a Porsche parked outside, which is really exciting. Just so happens that you're doing on today as well, you're doing some test drives, aren't you? People are turning up and testing. So before I go home, I'm definitely going to try and have a go in a Porsche. The environment we're in, though, yeah, we mentioned the fact that we have got a coffee shop here, we have got a post office here, we've got an M&S food here. Is this facility open 24 hours? If people rock up, say, middle of the night, can they still come up and buy a sandwich, or is it forecourt only at that time?
So forecourt only at that time, but we open till 9, I think, 9 p.m. So we're open, I think, from 8. So you've got quite a lot of hours to cover. But absolutely, the other thing is, if you do want to access the chargers at 10 p.m. at night, it's in a safe location, right? It's lit up,
of course.
And that's really important for people to feel confident that they can they can come and charge without being, you know, behind a Travelodge or something like it used to be. So there clearly just needs to be more of these around the UK.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, it's been a common comment and a, you could say, complaint actually from a lot of EV drivers, and especially, let's say, more vulnerable people who perhaps, yeah, they get to the a long drive home, they realise their battery's a bit low, right, got to find that nearest charge point. And it's, as you quite rightly say, often around the back of either a fuel station or a hotel or... in some cases, like a retail park, which, of course, at that time of the night is completely shut and completely closed. Yeah. And you do perhaps feel a bit volatile there. You're sat in your car, in your very expensive car, waiting for it to charge without the ability of going anywhere. Whereas here, yeah, it feels very kind of welcoming and it's a nice environment to be in. It's exciting. It's kind of feel like we're at the... I'm seeing a little glimpse into what will be very much the norm in another 10 years or so from now. And then, you know, I think 20 years from now, it's going to be... there'll be buildings like this cropping up all over the country, which is absolutely really, really cool. Before we delve into the kind of talking topics that I've got lined up, one thing I like to do is just kind of get a bit of an overview of you and your passion and what's got you to this bizarre field in which you work. So I'll take it in turns. I'll start with you, John, if that's okay. Two questions I'm going to ask. The first one is, can you give me an early core memory? Because I genuinely, we've known each other many, many years, but I don't know the answer to this question, so I'm looking forward to hearing the answer. Can you give me an early core memory, something that might have switched on the little light bulb in the back of your mind that has ultimately led you to the field in which you work now?
Oh, it's got to be parents, hasn't it? It's got to be my dad, really. Like, dads are always everyone's heroes. Yeah. So when I was growing up, he had the first-gen Honda VFR 750.
Oh, yeah.
And I just love those. And, you know, they'll be properly 80s now, like looking in sort of in retrospect. But he always just let me sit on them. And when I was old enough, I was allowed to go out on the back of him with, you know, at my mum wasn't too keen on that, obviously. But I think that is just one of those really, really strong memories. And also it must have been company cars, because he used to also let me drive his his company cars on Southport Beach.
Brilliant.
And I was probably like, you know, I was on his, you know, I was sat on his knees driving on the steering wheel. So I must have been, you know, I guess of a sort of eight or nine at the time. So, so they're very vivid memories in my head. Yeah.
Love it. And then, of course, so you ventured, I guess you're going to be best known to many of our listeners as a journalist, as somebody that's had a career writing about cars, reviewing cars, and of course motorcycles, very fittingly, we can see why. So talk to me about the transition then from that side, which is fairly common. I think a lot of people don't realise this. A lot of people will start off in a editorial field, journalist, writer, and then they venture into specific areas. We see it a lot in press offices and PR departments, don't we? People that look after press fleets for car manufacturers were once upon a time a journalist or once upon a time a writer. What was the transition like for you to go from somebody that was writing about cars, reviewing cars and bikes, to then be in an organisation like this one?
Change is constant, isn't it? I love change. I felt like with my editorial career, so I did a lot of stuff with Auto Trader. I was editor in chief at Auto Trader, and then editor in chief at Motor One, and did my tutelage was, well, my schooling was at Auto Car Magazine, which was just an amazing experience, and got to work with all these characters that I'd been growing up reading. You know, so it was very much like, you know, what had become me looking at this stage of characters, suddenly I was being allowed to come and play with those guys.
Yeah.
And it was amazing experience. But I think, yeah, as you've seen, well, as I've seen in my career, it's kind of migrated from sort of magazine print to digital to podcasting and vodcasting and all this sort of exciting stuff now. So you've got to keep moving. And as I'm getting into like this later stage of my years, I'm now a parent, and I have become more aware of, climate change, the issues that are going on around in our society around like noise and air pollution. Mm-hmm. And I've actually been diagnosed an asthmatic in my adult life, really. And I've lived in London for all my working life. And, you know, you've got to put those two things together, really, and sort of go, well, why is that?
Yeah.
And it is because of, you know, the cars and the vans and the buses that are all driving around that need to decarbonize. And so I see it like a real sort of, I want to use, you know, my my tools in whatever capacity I can to be that sort of force for change.
Yeah.
So my first sort of move, I would say, out of journalism was to help this joint venture between the UK government and the Society for Motor Manufacturers and Traders talk about electric vehicles and help consumers make that transition to electric vehicles. It was called Go Ultra Low. And that was like a really good like grounding for me to sort of understand policy and open my eyes up to an industry and an area that I just had no clue about. And as I was there, I was seeing this kind of like company in the background called GridServe, and they had this render of this big electric forecourt in Braintree that was, you know, going to be conceived, and the owner was named after a service station up on the M1, and I was like, what is the, you know, this is wild, what is going on? And I was really intrigued to learn more, and when I sort of dug more into the company, it was legit. You know, and everything about the company was predicated on sustainability, and it just really excited me, and I just thought, I'm actually going to have more impact being able to change behaviour, change perceptions working on this side than I actually am working in government and policy. So that's the direction I took.
Love it. Really cool. And it's great to hear that story, because it's a great one, because, you know, thinking back to when we first met, I think you were editor-in-chief at Auto Trader.
Yeah.
And I guess the main bulk of everything that was coming in from a road test point of view, be that two wheels or four wheels, was all petrol or diesel. Very few EVs. I think perhaps at the time that we first met, which would have been 2017-18, perhaps EVs at that point are just starting to kind of become a normal thing. We can see them in, we can walk into a Nissan showroom and get a Micra, a Note, and they're kind of there side by side for the first time. Beforehand, it was kind of like, oh, EVs are that weird little gee whiz thing that we occasionally see driving around Notting Hill, and that's about as geeky as it gets.
And then came Tesla Model S, right?
Exactly.
That was 07. Yeah. And that's when it blew up, because it was, that showed how exceptional service integration could become, and it started to change the narrative around cars, because it became more of, you know, cars as tech rather than cars as driving devices. And then there was a little bit of a divide.
Yeah.
And I'd say those two, you can have it both now in a way, I would argue. You know, the traditional OEMs are really catching up to Tesla in that fight. And then with service providers like GridServe providing like those charging solutions, I think we can compete on that charging platform as well. So it's going to become much, much more of a level playing field.
I think so. I think you're absolutely right. Rob, what about you? Let's go with early memory.
Sure.
What might have been that trigger point to lead you along the path to the world of automotive?
Automotive, wow. Okay, so I was in the army from school. Mm-hmm. So I spent 4.5 years in the army, in the House of Cavalry. In London, which was interesting, and I literally fell into this industry. You know, I came out of the army and I didn't really know kind of what I wanted to do. I enjoyed cars, and I remember someone offering me a job at a Honda dealership, and offering me a car. I was like, why not? Let's get involved. and I think from there, I'm a very curious chap. I like to kind of challenge the norm, and that's definitely in my makeup. I'm not sure where that comes from, but I think being in the automotive industry, I spent only 6 months at Honda, but I soon moved into the BMW brand and worked with Mini, and we helped Mini come into the UK and take off, which was great. And you know, I think that was in the dealer group, but I was quite intrigued about, okay, that's the dealer. How does the actual OEM, how does that connect with the dealers? And then actually, how does the OEM finance arms connect with the dealers? And then leasing took off. And then how does actually leasing kind of connect all these up as well? So I've kind of done it all since 2001. And that for me is like quite a nice rounded view of the automotive sector. And in actual fact, how we can then challenge that even further. And that brings me here. And, you know, I think... what really intrigued me, very similar to John, You know, I went to Braintree to meet Todd Toddington. I went to Braintree on the day that Boris announced the 2030 ban. And it was just, I was driving as it happened. I was like, wow, there's the stick.
If there's,
right?
if there's a message in the stars, sure, it's now.
It's happening. And and I went to Braintree and they still had all the wrappers on and all that stuff. It wasn't fully open. And you know, again, similar to John, you know, I've got two young children and I'm very aware of, you know, what society have kind of done to the planet today, and we haven't got long really to kind of make a change. What is really nice to hear over the last few days is that what we have been doing is making a difference. Mm-hmm. We just got to accelerate it. We've got to get on with it. Sure. And you know, having two young children has been the most inspiring thing in the world to become a dad. Mm-hmm. But you know, I've got a 10-year-old who actually adores this brand GridServe and what we're doing, and that is so powerful.
Yeah.
And it's nice for him to see, you know, that what I'm doing is applying everything that I know in the automotive space into something that's actually going to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And in actual fact, you know, when he starts driving, likelihood is it's going to be just EVs, right? And you know, he's going to have to adapt to that, and that would be all he knows. And same for my daughter who's 5. Yeah, I think that's kind of it about me. But you know, I think from a GridServe point of view, you know, we're part of a brand that's so exciting, and we're part of a brand that's actually just, you know, regardless of what message has just come out from government, we're accelerating. We're
sure.
just cracking
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah,
we've still got a climate emergency. We need to fight, and we need to get on with it.
Got it. And it's quite refreshing actually hearing the story that you've not perhaps come from the typical route of like being influenced as a car child, or you know, you've kind of gone into it with almost like a fresh set of eyes, which
sure.
is often the absolute best case scenario for so many brands, and not just automotive, but taking somebody in who perhaps is fresh to the industry but just has the right mindset in, okay, I see what you're doing, but have you considered doing it like this?
Sure.
And you suddenly get the people that have been in it for years and years and years going, doing everything by the book, oh, but we've always done it this way, then going,
absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea, which is really cool. I think that's really, really interesting. So just to make it a bit more casual and fun, let's talk about what mode of transport you used, both of you, to get here today. I know the answer is yours already, John, but I'm going to ask
you
for the benefit
tell
of the dear listener.
I look. It was a LiveWire 1. So brand new electric bike. So used to be Harley Davidson,
yeah.
but now they've sort of splintered off LiveWire into its own sub-brand.
That's a wild one, isn't it? So, because I genuinely don't know the answer to this, and I'm hoping you'll be able to tell me. So Harley Davidson still moving forward as a brand producing petrol-powered or gasoline-powered motorcycles.
Yeah.
And then LiveWire, because the Harley Davidson LiveWire came out, got that brilliant bit of PR with Charlie Borman and Ewan McGregor riding around South America. So now Harley have just said, actually, we're going to push the two brands separately. They're both in-house Harley. Like, looking at the front of that LiveWire, it is very much a Harley-Davidson LiveWire. It's got the same headlight unit, everything else, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the two brands have now completely separated.
Exactly, yeah. So it's that bike, what we see, LiveWire 1, is the same bike that was launched by Harley-Davidson, I'd say, 3 years ago. So there's a few little branding differences, mm-hmm. colour and trim, but ostensibly, same bike, yeah. same battery, same platform. Still really exciting, but yeah, I think what's probably happened is that maybe it's been a step too far for that traditional Harley Davidson audience, because if we're talking about traditional audiences, there isn't more traditional than a Harley customer.
You know,
they really like their chrome and their questionable clothing. so yeah, maybe it was.
It doesn't like a leather waistcoat.
Yeah, exactly. Or chaps, come on. So LiveWire, mate, it's a good idea, I think, really, to sort of get it splintered off, so you still leverage all the, you know, the expertise and the tradition from Harley Davidson and on the whole, the back end of the servicing. But you have this brand that can be, you know, more aggressive, more youthful, more vibrant,
nice.
And it's not going to rub up the traditional Harley customer in the wrong way.
Yeah.
So LiveWire 1 is very much the start of that new brand. So they have launched another bike as well. It's called the Del Mar,
mm-hmm.
which has a bit more of a flat track vibe to it, which will look pretty cool. We'll have to get one in to have a little ride around. But very exciting. Cool bike.
Cool. All right, we'll pick up on. I know I definitely don't want to have just. We're going to go off the rails at some point in this conversation and just talk about bikes. It's going to happen. So I want to explore the whole EV bike thing because I find it interesting. Rob, Did you drive here in an EV today?
I did. Of course I did.
God, so on brand.
Yeah, it wasn't quite two wheels. It was definitely four. And it was definitely, I could actually look after my hairstyle without having to wear a crash helmet. But it was a BMW i4, which is a cracking car. And, you know, JQ mentioned it earlier about Tesla Model 3s and that brand and the tech, et cetera, around it. We've got a car that actually does challenge Tesla in the BMW range, and yeah, it comfortably can cover 270 miles plus, and you know, without stressing or worrying or anything, it's a really cool car. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was my mode of transport.
Love it, and it is a significant car because it was one of the first EVs that I had on review, and I was really excited by it because of the simple fact that it looks like a car.
It's really important.
It's so important, isn't it? And I think this is something, I guess, a lot of people don't care. If a lot of people going out and they want to buy a car that's going to get them from A to B,
sure.
And if it's an EV, that's a bonus, and they don't particularly care what shape it is. But for old fuds like me that are just like, oh, I like the shape of a car, I don't necessarily want a big blobby SUV, and all the EVs seem to be appearing as exactly that, big blobby SUVs, including some BMWs, let's be honest. The iX came along and just like, wow, okay, that's a new looking thing, isn't it? And then suddenly the i4 came along, it's like, oh my god, it's a 3 Series. It makes sense. It's an actual car that we recognise.
Yeah.
And you're right. You know, I don't think we talk about this enough. In fact, we gloss over Tesla as a brand quite a lot as a podcast, as I think a lot of automotive publications do as well, because Tesla don't really look at the automotive press in the same way that other car manufacturers do. They're not reliant on those good reviews, because if people want to go and buy a Tesla, they tend to just go and buy a Tesla. Yeah. And that tends to be it. They do their own PR very well. So it is quite amazing when I hear those kind of topics of conversation of saying, you know, BMW clearly looked at what Tesla were doing. This new boy on the block, new kid on the block's come along, and it shook up the world with, hey, we can make an electric car, and it looks like a car, and it will have a great charging infrastructure, and it's going to work. And it's amazing to think that brand new Californian tech company has essentially influenced car brands that have been making cars for hundreds of years.
Sure.
It's mad. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I think, just on that, actually, I think to get the mass audience excited about going EV and moving from combustion engines to the traditional vehicles into the EVs, there needs to be more cars that just feel normal.
Yeah.
And BMW, the i4, is exactly that. And there's clearly loads of others out there that just feel normal. And that's important because, you know, people, it's a big change anyway, right? You know, you're changing your driving behaviours, your habits. So if you're doing that in a wacky EV, you know, that's quite a big change. So the more and more of these, you know, traditional vehicles that are coming to market with an electric drivetrain is important.
Yeah. And we as humans, we're a bizarre species because we get excited about the future and about change, and we all get excited about the idea of being in like a sci-fi film that we've been watching since kids. And then suddenly the idea of, well, hey, look, you can drive this car and it's the shape of an egg and it's yours. And you go, I want to drive that? That's mad. And it is amazing. As much as we like to think of ourselves as like ever-developing beings, we do not like change.
Absolutely right.
And I remember having this conversation with Ian Callum, actually. Huge, big-time car designer, designed most of the most beautiful Jaguars and Aston Martins we've ever seen. And I remember putting that question to him and saying, you know, why aren't we now seeing more radical shaped EVs? And his answer was because, well, the public won't buy them. You know, we're far too boring in that sense that we get excited about the idea of change until it happens. And we go, oh, but it doesn't look like a car. And it's exactly what I did. That's why I got excited about the i4, because it looks like a car. I should be the one at the forefront of the motoring press going, no, I'm going to drive this car and it's the shape of an egg and it's brilliant because it is. But I don't. The reality is I don't want to drive a car in the shape of an egg, and neither do lots of other people.
People are really chasing, or designers are really chasing coefficients of drag now, aren't they, for the electric vehicles. So you're starting to see quite a lot of pebble shapes car design coming through.
Turns out pebbles are quite aerodynamic.
Very aerodynamic, But no, it's nice to have a few angles every now and then, isn't it?
So it is. So let's talk about the kind of, and it doesn't have to be, I'm not asking for opinions as per GridServe, it can be your own personal opinions. It's just, I find it a fascinating talking topic. It's one that I frequently get asked about socially, family members down at the pub, that sort of thing, where people talk about the whole EV argument. I think there's definitely still a very large portion of people, both who are within the automotive industry, either as press, media, engineering, driving, who knows, and people that aren't in the automotive industry who are perhaps still a bit sceptical about the whole EV argument and saying, oh, wow, well, look, no, sustainable fuels is a thing now and e-fuels is a thing, so we can forget the whole EV thing. And, you know, there were the big arguments and the big conversations that frequently come up about, okay, they're green because they're no tailpipe emissions, but, you know, that, and that's that is certainly something that I'm sure we'll address in time throughout this conversation as well. But where do you see the kind of the future predictions of what's happening to the car market or the changes that are happening now? Because I know we are going to talk about the, you know, your particular role, Rob, with regards to leasing. I think that's going to be a great talking topic in itself. But do you foresee the world gradually trickling over to a big switch into EVs? Can you see it happening in from an opinion point of view? Do you think it's going to take a good long while? Do you think we're going to have a huge overlap for quite some time with ICE engines versus EVs? Where do you both sit with it? I don't know who wants to start on it.
I do think the direction of travel is set for electric vehicles, mm-hmm. for sure. I mean, we've got carrots and sticks, obviously, with varying timelines dictating it, but it's setting that pace for. And the market has already reacted, right? You've got big companies like Ford that have taken, they've already taken out, say, Focus and Fiesta out of production now, which were their two biggest selling, you know, combustion cars, because they're preparing for this electric vehicle future. Electric vehicles, like last year in the UK, were like 16% market share. They're already the second most popular like powertrain choice after petrol. And already this year, we're seeing the sales volumes year on year up about 40%. So you can see a clear hockey stick trend happening now with electric vehicles. That said, EVs don't have to be for everybody right now.
No.
Okay. So it's not, you know, whenever we're talking about this arbitrary deadline of 2035, it's kind of meaningless anyway, right? Because you change or you switch cars when you feel the need to or when you feel confident about it. It's not as if everybody has to rush and go buy a brand new car tomorrow.
Whenever we're
told to do so. There's going to be a lot of internal combustion engines in that car park for many, many years. And similarly, you know, the enthusiast market, you know, all those like low volume sports car manufacturers like the Caterhams and the Morgans and, you know, they still need a future as well. So I think it's going to be a mixed field, but for, you know, and I think it's important to have, you know, mixed technologies really. What I do see is the predominant method for passenger cars for sure is going to be electric. You know, where we used to drive around in our little, you know, Clios or Vauxhall Corsas, like, are we really going to miss the fact that we're not in a sort of a two-cylinder 1.1 you know, petrol anymore? I don't think so. And I think the benefits that you get from electric, you know, cleaner, faster, you know, price parity, it's coming for sure.
Yeah, it is.
And I just think they're fundamentally better packaged as well. Yeah. So there are a lot of benefits to be had. And just a quick point around, like, obviously, like new car sales. Say the UK goes through about, I think it was about 1.6 million cars, new car registrations last year. You got to think about the used market. It's about like 7 million
huge
cars.
Yeah,
it's much bigger, the used car market. So we need like these early adopters. We need people that are excited about electric cars to buy them now to basically create that used car market in the future for those people that might be like a little less certain about it, by which point there'll be so much more charging infrastructure covered. Yeah. We'll have so many more of these electric forecourts. If you had an electric forecourt on your doorstep, you'd have no dramas about switching to electric tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about that kind of used car market as well, because that's an interesting one. It's one that is definitely a big talking topic. We're seeing, well, across the board, regardless of powertrain or what's fueling the cars, we're seeing a little slump. I think we're at the beginning of seeing a bit of a slump with regards to secondhand car values, whilst the big delay from both COVID and some semiconductor shortages and various other bits and pieces that slowed down the manufacturing process for cars, that seems to have leveled out now, which in turn has caused a bit of a dip in secondhand prices. What are things looking like with regards to secondhand EVs? Because I know certainly in the early days that was a real concern point for a lot of people, saying, well, you know, my mobile phone battery dies after 2 years, so surely my car battery's going to die. We are learning now that it's the two aren't really comparable, are they? But are we seeing, are there good savings in secondhand EVs, and why?
There certainly is. There's just not a lot of solutions out there to fund them, like from my point of view, in the car leasing world. And we can touch on that later. I think there's also not a lot of solutions around consumer insight. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can buy a secondhand vehicle, you've got all your service history, and that's how you generally know that the car's been looked after or whatever.
Yeah.
In an EV space, you don't know the health of the battery.
No, of course.
You have no idea. You don't know how it's been used for 2 years. You don't know the state of health. And we are working on solutions to bring that to market, because it's important that someone buys a secondhand vehicle, they know exactly what they're getting. They know how the vehicle's been used, etc. They know the state of health, and that's really important. And so much so that, you know, that in the leasing world, it's the regulator BVRLA, and that they are actually looking at how do they put that into the policy, the leasing policy. You know, how the battery's been maintained, how it's been looked after. You know, but yeah, there's a lot to do in the used space, a huge amount to do, and even from the funder's point of view, you know, the funder, they fund these brand new vehicles, they negotiate discounts en masse, they put it into the market for people like us to put to consumers and fleets and salary sacrifice solutions, but that's only the first life, you know, and then all these vehicles come off contract and they go into the auction, and because there's no clarity in actually what is the battery health and stuff, it worries people about buying those vehicles. And that is causing a bit of a problem, but there are solutions. There are solutions, and it's definitely something that we're working on. We work very closely with the largest funders in the UK to help support that. Grids are just dedicated to battery electric vehicles. So we're seen as a bit of a go-to brand in the market find solutions, and we're actively finding solutions for that. But in theory, a used car, quite like a white goods, should come with a de facto standard of rating.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
You know, and consumers need it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Talk to me a little bit about the difference in percentage of cars being sold or leased, let's say, as company cars or lease vehicles, versus cars that people are actually going into a showroom and buying as a personal vehicle. Mm. Are we seeing that gap close a little bit now? Because I know that for sure it's been very much dominated by, if you have a limited company and you can get an EV, you essentially get a free car in some cases. There have been a lot of incentives from companies and employers and employees having electric cars. Are we now starting to see more of Mr. and Mrs. Jones going into their BMW dealership and buying an i4 as opposed to the new 4 Series?
Yeah, I think the EV registrations to date have been vastly dominated by business contract hire, limited companies, salary sacrifice solutions, company car solutions, because the benefits are great for an EV, right? 2% BIK. It's a cracking way to
benefit
get into
in
an
kind.
EV. Benefit in kind. But I think there's just so many great benefits to adopting an EV through a business. And where there's needs to be a lot of work is in that consumer space.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we have here. You know, we are, you know, our passion is being able to help consumers come in and learn and develop their understanding, and feel confident speaking to gurus who aren't salespeople. They're here to guide and just share knowledge in a really nice space, and that's how we'll help drive consumer confidence to go electric.
Absolutely.
A GridServe guru is basically like an Apple guru, John.
Brilliant.
So they receive like loads of training around all the latest electric cars, the latest charging technologies. So they're effectively, you know, your walk-in encyclopedia on all things cars. So you could come to a GridServe forecourt and just have a conversation with that person and talk to them about your needs, like, you know, how many miles do you do normally in a working week? you know, what do you need your car to do?
Yeah.
And then from that information, they can give you a selection of cars to check out.
Lovely.
And as Rob said, they're not on commission. They're salary.
Yeah.
And they can just show you, and because it's a multi-brand setup,
there's no bias.
There is no bias. Yeah. So they can say, you can check this car company out, or, oh, have you even heard of BYD?
Mm,
which
yeah.
just all of a sudden has just come out of nowhere and is really impressive for the money. So it's just having that level of detail that is sometimes missing, should be said, in traditional car showrooms. I think we, as a company, we are investing a lot of money in educating people because we want this transition to be easy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the reason why they've built this content team, to try and help people, you know, make that easy transition into an electric vehicle and understand this lingo, because it is a new language, you know, and people are going to have to like learn some of it, and we're going to try and simplify it as much as we can.
Absolutely. PR has never been more essential, has it, in this time of transition. I think we've kind of skirted around it perhaps inadvertently, the difference in opinions of, let's say, younger drivers, and let's say the drivers that are going to be driving in 10-15 years, who are now very much kids living their best life. The way that they look at cars in the future is infinitely different to the way even us in our 30s think about cars and the way that we look at cars, because of course we're so used to everything being a particular way. It's going to be really interesting. So I guess that role, that kind of PR and communications role, is about allowing people to come in who have been a bit set in their ways and going, look, it's not that scary. We're not telling you to buy our brand and not the other brand, because we're not the brand, we're just the advisor. I think it's a great thing.
It's falling through the cracks at the moment as well. I think that's what we're tending to see. What we're actually experiencing at these forecourt sites, a lot of people are charging here for the very first time.
Yeah.
So they have literally picked up their car from a dealership. They've not been given a sufficient handover.
Wow.
And they're coming here and they're speaking to a GridServe guru and saying, what do I do? Like, how do I charge this thing? So that's where we sort of see there is a real, real tangible need for this kind of information.
Definitely. Yeah, incredible. What I'm going to do, if it's okay, I'm going to dive to a very short advert break, just to allow a quick and easy, convenient place for me to place an advert on this podcast. And then when we come back, we will talk about, I want to explore your role a bit more, Rob. I want to talk about the fact that car ownership is changing. We've kind of skirted into it a couple of times in this conversation already, but talking about the leasing, talking about how you, dear listener, might even benefit if you are an employee of a company, if you utilise a company car scheme, if you currently have a company car through work, how you actually could win the game with the help of EVs and with the help of GridServe, which is, of course, why we're here today. So bear with us, dear listener. It's going to be potentially a 30-second break or a couple of seconds, depending if the advert lands or not. But when we come back, more on this and probably a bit of nonsensical chat about motorcycles as well, because that's just what we do.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If. Only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
The Driven Chat Podcast.
And we are back in the room, back in our little, how are we describing this? Pod. It's a pod.
A meeting pod. Yeah.
A meeting pod, which is beautifully sound deadened. If it wasn't for the little drone of air conditioning and the occasional coffee grinder machine. Well, we're not complaining about that because there is essentially a Costa coffee shop right behind us, which is keeping us all fueled beautifully. But what a brilliant little space in this very, very brilliant building. Now, before the advert break, I kind of teased at the fact that if you, dear listener, happen to be a a person that enjoys a company car or perhaps has a company that enables you to have a bit of budget into involving a car into what you do, then this part of the podcast could be quite interesting for you, because you may be able to learn about some benefits that you perhaps aren't aware of. I heard a little bit about it this morning, and put it this way, it's already got me thinking, hey, maybe I don't need a 3-litre diesel Land Rover Defender as my company car. I could have an EV. And I feel like we're about to learn why. So I'm going to look at you here, Rob, because I think you're going to take the leadership on this one. I guess the title for this particular segment of the episode is Car Ownership is Changing.
Yeah.
We know that. I think everybody knows that now. I think it's become very normal these days for people to consider the option of leasing a car rather than going out and buying a car. Almost nobody anymore is going into a showroom with a big case of cash or bank account equivalent and doing a bank transfer to take a car away. Everyone's looking at the finance options, spreading across payments, that sort of thing. But talk to me about leasing an EV and how that differs to perhaps the normal leasing that we might be used to in a petrol or diesel vehicle, and where some benefits might jump in.
Sure. Yeah. So, okay, leasing an EV, I think, just works perfectly. And if you think about, we mentioned at the start of the session, the EVs that are in the market today, and what was available 3 years ago, is vastly different. Mm. And that's going to continue. That's going to continue to change. Every year there's new product coming, BYD and all these other brands coming to the UK, bringing more and more choice and accessibility because of the price. Mm-hmm. And I think, and the range is great and the tech's great and all of these things. So leasing is a usership model rather than ownership. And leasing works really, really well, certainly on an EV, because you're ultimately, the funder does all the work pretty much. So when I say funder, we've got the LexAuto lease, the Alphabet, the Santander's, these characters out there that do all the negotiating with brands en masse. So, gone are the days where you go into a dealership and you're haggling with the salesman this stuff. You don't need to do any of that. And leasing is so convenient. So, all of that's done up front. They negotiate with these brands. They put deals into the marketplace, use people like us to surface them to buyers or consumers. And ultimately they set the RV position, and you're simply funding the usership of it. You've not got depreciation worries, not got any of that to worry about. So like now, for example, we've got this used car issue where values are plummeting a little bit or it's a bit unstable. You haven't got to worry about all of that. You literally use the vehicle for a set period and for a set term, set mileage. You set the initial rental you want to put down, and you ultimately get the payment that you're happy with. And that takes care of everything. And you can throw service and maintenance into it. So in theory, you could have one payment that does everything. And it's just great. And then if you take that into the business world, you've then got situations where, all of that's done for you, and you simply pay 2% benefit in kind to run a vehicle. Mm. If you take the car that I drive, for example, that equates to about £30 a month tax.
Really?
It's great. It's awesome. And why wouldn't I do that? And then I've then got a home charger at home, and I've never had someone come and fuel up my petrol car while I'm sleeping. Just simply plug my car in at home. It's so convenient. And there's solutions like that. And then even further, we take that situation even further. Salary sacrifice. It's another one to make a kind of a company car option open to more people, because in effect it is that. It's a company car. It's a company car setup. The contract is between the client and the funder, the employer and the funder, not the employee. So the employee does no credit check, the employee does no deposit.
Yeah,
it's literally you choose the vehicle you want. It gets deducted before tax. So if you're a 20% taxpayer, you save 20%. If you're a 40% taxpayer, you save 40%. And all of that included in terms of service and maintenance. You can get a home charger installed at your home within that as well, within that agreement. We give 3 months free energy across our whole network, which spans the entire length and breadth of the UK. And we plant 100 trees to offset any carbon from the production of the vehicle. And so we've got solutions for consumers, we've got solutions for company cars, and we've got solutions for salary sacrifice.
Amazing. And is this partially like a trickle-down incentive, like government incentives that you're then able to push forward to the front-end user that perhaps a lot of people just aren't aware of?
Government incentives don't really exist anymore.
Okay.
But, you know, I think these, you know, I think salary sacrifice has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, cycle to work schemes and that stuff are all salary sacrifice. Where it becomes really, really appealing is on electric vehicles because of the low benefit in kind. Mm. And there's a couple of things there. It, for an employer, it's great incentive for attracting and retaining staff to offer something like that. It's a great incentive to improve their environmental credentials as a business.
Yeah.
And like I say, it gives an employee who wouldn't normally get a company vehicle within a package, it gets them the opportunity to taste and feel that company car solution, and it opens up to them and their families. So, you know, and the other thing is, like, you know, if I could do a salary sacrifice through GridServe, through my scheme, and that would be a car for my wife or my son or my daughter when they start to drive, because they may not be able to get a car. So you can use it as a perk to just to get people in green vehicles, and that's really important. So it opens up to so many people.
It's amazing. So let's imagine we've got a listener at home who is perhaps has a company car through their employer. Where do they start? Who do they need to talk to first? Do they need to go to their employer and just say, right, there's this thing that we might need to be aware of? Or do they go to you? How does the process work?
Yeah, so we get approaches from employees to say, how do we encourage our employer to go to roll this scheme out. A lot of it, there's a stat the other day, it was about 70% of businesses are wanting a salary sacrifice scheme. But there's so many providers out there, and you know, which is great, but a lot of them are big, they're funders in themselves, you know, a lot of their lease companies, and we are quite agile. Our scheme's very, very agile. You know, well, firstly, you've got, you know, solutions like what we've got here today. You know, we've held a session here today with local businesses, talking to them about our salary sacrifice scheme. In our environment, we've got 30 vehicles outside that they can come and drive and explore. And no one else is doing that.
No.
And I think, so yeah, we'll go back to your question about how do people come to us? Yeah, we've got a sales team here who could talk to an employee about the scheme, help them encourage their employer. Employers are coming to us as they have done today. You know, a whole panel of local businesses have come today to learn about our scheme, and it's really simple. You know, I think you know we can help. Our platform allows us to support you in, or you as the employer, allows us to help you support you on your policies, on the scheme rules, how you implement it, which all sounds really scary, but it's really not. You know, we can help set up your scheme for you in the platform, and it basically, by answering a few questions, it writes all the policy, all the terms and conditions for you. And then it's simply just offering out to your employees, get them ordering cars, get them coming in here to explore which car works for them. We're taking it a step forward as well, because that's great that we've got a scheme there, but we actually need to help those employees determine which car, which package, which solution works for them. So we're developing we're bringing a solution like an EV readiness survey. And what that does is basically ask a few probing questions. So, you know, what car do you currently drive? You know, and how do you use your vehicle? So what sort of journeys do you do over a certain period of time? And what that kicks back is a lot of insight around, okay, so you drive this car, you drive these three journeys over a monthly period, which equates to, I don't know, 1,000 miles a month. And that suggests that you should look at this car, this car, this car. And in actual fact, you only charge it once on the public network, which will cost you this much money. And if you had a home charger installed, it would cost you this much money and save you this much money from the vehicle you were driving.
Yeah,
it's so cool. And we're bringing that into our salary sacrifice proposition because, yeah, you know, what we've learned from having the scheme live in since July is we've got 20 clients. We've got about 1,600 employees on that scheme.
Yeah.
We've got good uptake, but we want to go more. We need to help more and more people answer those questions and find the right vehicles that suit for them.
Love it. Talk to me a little bit about, I guess, I want to explore some of the arguments and the counter-arguments and people that might come forward and go, well, look, I love the idea of this, but I don't have somewhere to charge at home. I mean, perhaps just to give an easy example. So I've just bought a house, and for the first time in 15 years, I have off-street parking outside my front door where I have the availability to perhaps install a charger and plug in at home, which is great. But up until that point, it's never been an option for me. I've been in apartment blocks with underground car parks or on-street parking or terraced houses. And there'll be many people listening, I'm sure, who are in exactly that scenario. They don't have the off-street parking availability at home. Tell me about the public charging infrastructure. Is that improving? And what about the cost of charging? Because I know that from a journalist point of view, having electric cars on test up until recently, and I still haven't had a charger installed at home, but for me, and as it would be right now if I were to take an electric car home today, I would still be relying on the public charging network, which, no secret, is quite an expensive system to use. If you want to charge your car from zero to full at a motorway services, it is the same, if not slightly more at the moment, than, say, filling my tank with diesel.
Sure.
Is that getting better? And what does the future look like in terms of if we all decide, right, let's all go out and get ourselves an EV, but we live in terrace houses or apartment blocks with no on-street parking, or no off-street parking, I should say. How is that shaping up?
Yeah, it'd be wrong of me to sit here and say it's not looking great as a grid service in energy, but we are doing everything to accelerate more and more charging points across the UK. So, you know, we have our two forecourts, which is awesome. We've got Gatwick coming. We've got others in the pipeline for next year. We've got the electric highway, which spans from Land's End to John O'Groats across motorway service areas. We've got some retail sites that we've recently put charging into. So Dobby's as a garden centre, which is great for us because it's whilst dwell time, they're out shopping, their cars are charging.
Yep.
So we are single-handedly challenging or accelerating the growth of our charge points to bring the confidence for more and more people to go electric. So if you haven't got a home charger, there's vast amount of opportunities out there to charge your car, whether that's with us or other providers. There's more and more charge points popping up everywhere across the UK, and it's becoming far easier. Of course, we're always going to be chasing our tails because more and more EVs are coming out onto the road today. But for us, we're not standing still. We're accelerating it as fast as possible. So, yeah, JK.
Yeah, I'd say, like, uniquely as well, from a charge point operator perspective, GridServe wants to be energy independent. So what we're doing is we're actually building, industrial scale solar farms all across the UK. And the energy that's generated from these solar farms with battery storage, that's the energy that's actually going into the chargers all around the network.
Cool.
So, it's a powerful story, but it's also a true story.
Mm-hmm.
And we're acquiring more solar farms now because we're charging so many vehicles. I think last month we charged 150,000 vehicles. Yeah. You know, so that's happening each month along this GridServe electric highway that's just started, really. It's only just getting bigger, and you can sort of see with the growth curve in registrations, we're going to need more energy generation as well to support
that. Yeah.
But I think the nice thing about having our own solar farms is that there are going to be those occasions that if it's our own energy, we might be able to dictate those prices at some stage as well. So that's definitely something that we can look into about controlling the prices a bit more, at a later stage.
Yeah, that's really important. I think it's great that we are able to have those conversations and bring up those talking topics. And that was, of course, one of the other... It was a segment that I would be berated if I didn't bring up a couple of the common but what about questions, which, of course, I'm sure you guys must get all the time, but certainly we get as predominantly an audience of classic car lovers and sports car lovers. There's always that argument of, wow, you know, people, nobody wants to feel like they're the bad guy. Nobody wants to feel like they're destroying the planet by keeping their old car on the road. And often there wants to be a counter argument of, yes, but where is the power coming from? I guess there's that argument answered. Yes, we're at a transitional stage where at the moment we are still seeing fossil fuel power stations giving power to the grid. That is very much a thing, sadly. But the infrastructure is changing. You know, I think just as a personal prediction, I think another 10 years or so, perhaps the perception of things like nuclear power might have a slightly better PR story than what it has by a lot of people at the moment, which to me seems like a really green way of producing electricity. Makes sense. It's quite easy to do in comparison to building solar farms and building wind turbines and things. But what about the other common questions, the things like the PR challenge that comes with where the components for batteries come from, how they're put together, the journeys in which these boats are being sailed around the world in order to get materials to be refined into batteries before being shipped back to factories to be put into cars that are then shipped off to final locations. Is that getting better?
Whoa, you've opened an absolute minefield there, dude. In terms of the supply chain and the geopolitics surrounding supply chain, you've got to sort of look to China to sort of say that they have a lot of those areas sewn up, which is why we're seeing such strong advances from those like in-house companies like your BYDs.
Yeah, of course.
Because they have that supply chain. And interestingly, a lot of the premium manufacturers over in Western Europe are using those batteries. You know, BYDs are supplying batteries in many cases to other brands. I don't know how you. Well, what we're seeing as well is there's nations that are trying to get in on the act on certain sort of minings of lithium. So like in Cornwall, they're trying to open up a lithium mine over there, aren't they, to try to get to claim some sort of ownership around this like land grab of raw materials.
Sure.
But because so much money is wrapped up in the value of the battery, it's about a third of the price of a car is the battery. I think it's going to spawn this huge recycling element now, because no one wants to just continually mine, mine new materials, virgin materials, when we have this sort of car park fleet. And because of the value inherent in the batteries, I think it will create this entire industry that's dedicated to remanufacture, to reuse. And that's the kind of sort of circularity that the industry is desperate for.
Sure.
And some manufacturers are further ahead on that journey than others, I'd say.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I've seen, I don't know if you've seen this as well, but there's a couple of companies in the US that have developed this amazing refining technology, taking expelled batteries, old batteries, and essentially separating the components, because the components themselves still have a use, whilst the battery in a solid state will come to the end of its life. The actual precious metals and components inside that make that battery a good battery are still valid. They can then be reused and repurposed into new batteries. They just have to be pulled apart, separated, and then put back together again. And as you say, John, I think we're going to see that become more of a common thing. And I often use the same argument, especially when talking to people a couple of generations older than us, who kind of shrug and quaff and joke about how it's all terrible for the world. And we think about the comparison to even 25 years ago. We look at performance cars and the plain and simple version of MPG now versus MPG then. If we look back at the early 2000s and supercars that were coming out with like 4 MPG on a car that could do 190 miles an hour, and now we can go out and buy a car that can do 250 miles an hour and basically cruise along doing 40-odd MPG, which is like, it's just mind-bending. The technology is always getting better. The advancements are always improving. And I feel like there is a lot of people at the moment that are putting the argument across that, oh, God, but it doesn't make sense now, so it's never going to make sense. But the reality is it is changing. But, yeah, I find it really interesting to hear from guys like yourselves who are in this world to see if there is anything else that perhaps we can then educate our dear listener and go, well, look, yeah, okay, things aren't ideal right now, but here's why it's already getting better. So we are starting to see that unfolding.
Yeah, totally. And like, as a, you know, how to say this, like, as a generation, right? I think if the solution of what we have now is to simply shift everybody from, you know, petrol burning cars to electric cars. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. I don't think we've actually solved anything. I don't think that is the future. I think we have to look about, with decarbonisation transport, we have to look at other transport forms, like, you know, new modality. Public transport needs to sort of mm-hmm. play a much stronger part. Car sharing, ride sharing, electric bicycles that we've got on sale here, you know, that these are all going to be absolutely critical to helping us, like, get to this point. It's not simply about moving a person from one box to the to the next box. We need to think harder than that, for sure.
Yeah, and just on that point, actually, I think that's certainly a mission of mine in GridServe is, okay, we lease cars, just cracking, but there needs to be more than that. Yeah. So, you know, there needs to be, you know, our solution right now is a test drive solution right here. But, you know, my goal is to take that test drive into a subscription, take that subscription into a flexible lease, take the flexible lease into a leasing service. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be car sharing, it can be car clubs, it can be all these things. You know, take Gatwick, for example. You know, my goal is to try and bring a car club solution to that, because, you know, again, if someone can fly in from Europe, our forecourt is right there on South Terminal. They could take an EV from us into the city for a meeting, 3 days, bring it back, and just fly back to Europe. Mm-hmm. These solutions have to come, and because one size doesn't fit all. Leasing isn't for everyone. Leasing is for the majority, but it isn't for everyone. And it might be that actually someone wants a car for 12 months with the option to be able to terminate it after 6 months. That doesn't exist today. Mm-hmm. You know, these solutions don't exist apart from a subscription. But in actual fact, subscription is interesting as well, because the average contract on a subscription is about 14 months. That's not a subscription, that's a lease.
That's right.
But it's a lease with flexibility. So there's a lot of speak out there, and a lot of references to all of these services, but it all really comes down to leasing. It's just more of a flexible package. So for me, my dream, like I say, is to take someone, a consumer here that's got their coffee and they want to go out for a test drive, the ability to be able to extend that test drive because they want it, they want more of it, they just want to actually use it over 3 days. So we're trying to bring that to market. And then the ability to be able to take it from that to say, actually, quite fancy this, let's get it on a 3 month lease, for example, and it turns up next week. And it's these sort of things that we have to bring, because we, you know, GridServe, we want to be that go-to brand that people just trust to be able to come and get all the knowledge they need to from here. And, you know, they take a package from us that has all their charging included and all that type of stuff. That's one payment gives you all of that. And that's where we're heading.
That's really cool. I really like that. So to kind of pick up on a more, let's say, positive outlook on things, because I guess your job, I don't envy your job, John, especially with the PR role of, you know, trying to educate and trying to settle the concerned minds around this terrifying new world of EV for a lot of people. What are your, it'd be interesting to hear from both of you, your kind of future predictions, your positive future predictions, let's say even 10 years from now, of how you think the infrastructure, the world of EVs, the world of motoring perhaps is going to be different to now, knowing what you know at the stages you're in your career with GridServe. What do you foresee as, don't worry, it's probably going to be good because... Or is that more difficult to answer than I thought?
No, well, you'd expect in another 10 years' time that charging an electric vehicle is just going to be as easy and as commonplace as going into a Mackey's drive-through now. Do you know what I mean? It's just something that is inherent. It's you just know what to do. You know what the process involves and what you get out the back of it. So I think there'll be a lot more. There'll be time for the consistency element in terms of the regulation, the size of like the charging areas, the more flexibility on these leasing vehicles that are available.
Yeah,
but I think you'll see a landscape that is predominantly electric. Mm-hmm. I think. And I dare say that you'll be driving an electric car in 10 years, John.
Well, maybe a lot sooner than that after the conversations that we've been having off mic today. I'm kind of thinking, well, maybe I could get myself in a little i4 or something.
Yeah, you'll be walking straight from this pod into a test drive.
I think
let's do it.
Yeah. What's also cool is that obviously Grid Service was founded by two brothers. Uh-huh. So what the one's called Toddington, who's the sort of he's the main CEO, front of house.
Yeah.
He steers the ship on a day-to-day basis. Then we've got Heston, the other brother, and he's already sort of 10, 15 years in the future. Okay. So I think, you know, the forecourt that we're sitting in now will be fundamentally different in that 10 years time.
Think?
I think this, yeah, even this, wow, feels like the future now.
Yeah.
It's not going to feel like the, you know, the future in another 10 years time. I think that this will be reinvented once more.
Okay.
Because we'll have faster charging speeds. You know, we'll have more charging available. There'll be much more requirements for that area to do. We'll have depot charging for trucks in 10 years, I imagine, you know. Yeah. So it's going to look wild.
Yeah. And along the same lines, what do you see happening right now, or the world of EVs as it is right now? What do you see needing to change really quickly to make your lives easier in both convincing people to get into an EV and have a go, but also to change that kind of public perception of EVs? What do you see as being the things that need to change really quickly?
For me, price.
Yeah.
You know, I think price is a barrier right now for many. You know, if you can think you can go and get, on a lease, for example, you can go and get a Vauxhall Corsa, petrol Corsa for, I don't know, £140 a month, mm-hmm, but the equivalent EV is 300.
Yeah.
That needs to change. Of course, South Sac solves a lot of that, but South Sac isn't available to everyone, right? Because, you know, some people might be, you know, unemployed or whatever.
Sure.
And, you know, they don't have those solutions available to them. But making it more accessible for more people has to happen. Mm-hmm. So more product needs to come to market at price point. Funders need to come to market with, you know, compelling offers. And, you know, and my job is to, how do I package all of that up into one price so it just makes sense?
Yeah.
And we're doing a lot of that now, but more needs to happen. Used cars, so much more needs to happen in that area to make it more accessible for more people.
Yeah.
I'd love it if it wasn't the subject of electric vehicles and decarbonisation wasn't so politicised. I know we've sort of skirted around the edges of you know, the changing of the bans and stuff, but it's a bit of a political hot potato, and I don't think it should be. I think it's one of those subjects that everybody needs to get on board. You know, we need to achieve net zero as a country by 2050. We know transport is like the biggest sector for emissions in our country. Like, this is one of the main levers that we can use to try and address it. So I think all political parties have, you know, need to just get behind it as a sort of fixed agenda in a way, and stop using it as a bit of a political ball to whack about.
Sure. Yeah, makes sense. I'm going to kind of alleviate the difficult questions now, try and make it a bit more fun. And I want to explore the fun side of EVs. And I think this is a perfect time for us to bring up the fact that you, John, have travelled here today on an electric motorcycle, which I think is something I've had such a real tiny, tiny glimpse. I've ridden one electric motorcycle, probably about 25 metres in an underground car park.
Yeah.
Because a friend of mine, Joanna, had one as a press bike and said, have a go on this. We lived in the same village. Have a go on this. Rode it around the car park. Thought, oh, that was quite good. And that's it. That's all I've experienced. And to me, electric bikes have been around for a good few years now. I was thinking by now, as the kind of the toy side of motoring, surely they should be everywhere right now. But that hasn't really happened, has it? So,
no, but I think it's the P word again, isn't it? What Rob's referring to. It's around price, because so much money is sort of wrapped up in that battery. And also, like small motorcycles and scooters are comparatively like very affordable,
mm-hmm,
and quite fuel efficient. So it's quite a difficult ask from an electric product. Having said that, I've ridden that obviously here from like London to Norwich today. It's this Livewire One, and I am convinced in terms of the, if you needed like an electric scooter now or a commuter, I think electric is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
because yes, it's quick, obviously. Like, you roll on the throttle on that and you can hit 62 in like 3 seconds.
Wow.
But, you know, that's such a normal conversation to be having now about electric, isn't it? Like, performance has become this kind of de facto, you know, democratizing benefit, mm-hmm, of anything electric. So what's most impressive to me about this Livewire one is the low speed balance, because when you're going around town, obviously, you'd traditionally be sort of like, you know, balancing your clutch cable all the time and you know, sort of trying to navigate through vehicles and filtering and on an electric bike, because you just have that immediacy of torque and the simplicity of just like a roll on throttle, no clutch lever whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It's just so easy, and the weight is quite low and centralized, so it's very well balanced. And the most important thing was, I didn't even think about really, but it was, you know, when you're sat on like a big motorbike and you're sat at a traffic light or you're in town for a while, there's a lot of heat leak, isn't there?
That you get
into your trousers apartment.
And
it's not pleasant.
No, yeah.
So after, you know, half an hour in town on that, I was like, oh my gosh, like this is so much nicer to ride.
Cooking my testicles.
I'm not on fire. That was like a really sort of strong incentive to just go, gosh, this actually is a better experience. It managed. I went over to the Gatwick Electric Forecourt the other day actually on it, just to have a look at progress. And you obviously, so you could sort of scoot through London and then like whip on the throttle and, you know, instantly you're up to like motorway speeds. And there's no fairing on it. So obviously, like any naked motorcycle, you get bashed about a bit at those sort of speeds. But in a way, because there's no noise, maybe that gives you a better sort of semblance of speed, you know, when you're back at those levels.
Mentioned the price point is the struggle, so hit us with the headline on that one.
It hurts, man. It's £23,000 for a Livewire one. It's a lot of money. And you know, when you look at other bikes for that money, you're looking at top end performance bikes, you know, from the likes of, you know, the Ducatis of this world. Super desirable. It is a big ask. I think you really need to be sort of like wedded into that technology for the time being. But, you know, give it a few more years. And I certainly think lower down the pricing spectrum when you look at other electric bikes. I mean, I'm really excited by this one called a BMW CE04. I don't know if you've seen that.
Is this the scootery?
Electric scooter
thing.
But super cool. Yeah, like really modern and progressive. I wish like BMW Motorrad's designers worked on the cars. Because they all need sorted out. Apart from your i4, Rob, of course. But I just think those scooters are like, you know, stylistically they look, you know, they're really contemporary, really strong, still practical.
Yeah.
And that I think is going to be the sweet spot for electric bikes.
I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, I think there's a lot of companies that we saw companies like Zero, didn't we, coming along a few years ahead of everyone else, going, right, we're going to make a electric sports bike. And on paper, it kind of made sense. You're like, this sounds good, because as you say, that immediate performance, immediate torque, they look quite cool. That low down weight, the heat saving, which is a massive thing. It's a difficult thing to try and get your head around if you're not a motorcycle rider, but if you can sit on even just a Ducati Panigale that's just been running for a couple of hours, just sit on it with the engine off, you'll soon learn what we're talking about. It's a hot thing to sit on. But then I guess there's been the struggle with, you know, the beauty of motorcycles as we've always known them as a recreational fun weekend toy is the ability to have a full tank of fuel, you go out for a ride, you do 150 odd miles, like, right, time to put some fuel in the tank, you go to the petrol station, you fill up, and then you carry on. It kind of feels like we need to catch up a bit, don't we, for the bike world, because there isn't really a quick and easy solution. It's not a case of, I guess a lot of people might think, well, it's a smaller battery, surely, so you can plug it in, it's going to take 10 minutes, then off you go, but that isn't quite the case, is it?
No, so the Livewire's got a battery size of, it's 15 kilowatt hours, and that's good for a range of around like 90 to 100 miles per charge. So ordinarily, that'd be absolutely fine, because I actually think like right-sizing of batteries is really important. On the car's perspective, we've gone into this like crazy world where we're getting like hundreds of kilowatt hour battery packs, when the majority of driving is going to be, you know, 50 miles a week or something.
Absolutely.
So you shouldn't need a battery that big.
Yeah.
So I kind of get, I like where Livewire is going on that context. The issue that it's got is that the maximum charging speed is around 20 kilowatts.
Right.
So it just means that even on a DC fast charger here, it would take, you know, I'd say it would take up to an hour to charge the Livewire one. And bear in mind that the chargers that we have at, say, Norwich Electric Forecourt and all the other sort of super hubs around the country, they're up to 350 kilowatt capable. Mm. you know, so Livewire with its 20 kilowatts, you kind of show where the gap is.
Yeah.
So, but as soon as they address those matters, and it will happen.
It will.
Because they're now this sort of independent electric-only brand, so they're going to get that software right, and they're going to get the charging right. I think they'll really come into their own. And as you say, that Livewire 1 is that legacy product from Harley-Davidson. Mm. The next one is their own.
Yeah.
So let's see where they go in terms of those like ultimate charging speeds and battery sizes. Yeah. And
it's going to be that the day that I can have a bike, even if it is only still going to have a range of 100 miles, but the ability to charge in 5 or 10 minutes.
That's it. Wow. Yeah, that's it.
That's the answer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because even now, if we're going in and filling up a motorcycle we're riding with petrol, it's 5 minutes in a forecourt. By the time you filled up and gone in and had a chocolate bar or had a coffee or something before then getting back on the bike and faffing around with your gloves and helmet, you've spent 5 minutes there. So if we can get that time span to plug in, that's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
What about sports cars? Do you feel like we're going to see more EV sports like car basis?
Totally, and I'm really excited by that as well, because you know you've seen what's possible now with, say, Alpine and the A110.
Yeah.
You know, if they can do that with a combustion car. And obviously Caterham started that Alpine A110 as a joint venture, didn't they? So
yeah, of course.
And now Caterham have shown their own electric offering, what they could be doing. That's exciting, because then you're talking about sort of lightweight electric sports cars. Mm. You've seen the technology come through from Hyundai, you know, with this Ioniq 5N,
and
they're doing gear ratios in an electric single speed motor.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that's going to be fun. They're trying to inject. You can see what they're doing, can't you? They're trying to inject these elements of control that get those motoring enthusiasts excited. And it's working on me. I can't wait to drive those things and see what they're like.
Yeah. Have you seen much of an appetite from your side, Rob, of people coming in going, right, I like the idea of switching to EV. I might have, you know, they might perhaps got the some sort of employment incentive. How many are coming to you going, I want the fast one, I want the sporty one, rather than I want the one that I can put the pushchair in the back and the golf clubs and everything else?
Yeah, well, if you look at Salzac, a lot of the cars we put on the road are Porsche Taycans, right?
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely they are. Yes, absolutely. And there's, you know, like JQ says, there's so many cool cars coming. You know, I've enjoyed some nice Audi product in my past, RS4 Avants and stuff, which I actually adore. But I've made the transition to an EV and I love it.
Yeah.
It's such a nice place to be. You know, and just driving them is great. You know, you've got instant torque if you need it. I actually find myself slowing down, to be fair, because it's just less stressful. It's nice. It's a good place to be. And I think, and they're really enjoyable. You know, this BMW I have, I love driving it. It's great fun. I get to drive some lovely cars like we have here today. I think you're absolutely right. I think the brands are trying to bring product that excites the enthusiasts, such as the N, the Hyundai Ioniq 5N. You know, I think that stuff, and the MG4 now that's just come, the X-Power, which is ridiculously quick, like three seconds or something stupid, 0 to 60. So, you know, I think there's some really cool stuff coming. The hot hatches, you saw the Renault, the little cool, man. And what's the other one? The Golf GTI. So cool. That, you know, that these things, that's what I mean about these things need to come to attract the masses.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's exciting times. Yeah, I like the idea of the hot hatch revelation.
Totally
agree. The world of hot hatches is what's got most petrol heads into cool cars later in life. We've all started somewhere with a little front-wheel drive, something a bit quicker than it probably should be for its size and weight. And the minute we start seeing more of that coming in the form of EVs, I think that's where it's going to get really exciting, especially for the new drivers, the drivers that are going to be getting their license in 3 or 4 years. If their entry into fun cars is a little hot hatch EV, then that's the argument done, isn't it?
And as the charging infrastructure across the country improves, there will be more incentive for companies to right size the battery, because it'll bring the prices down, and it'll make cars more fun because they're lighter. I think the future's looking good.
I feel like it is. I feel like I've learned a lot today, which is cool. I enjoy learning things. I enjoy seeing things from a different perspective, and I really hope that that you, our dear listener, you've learned something as well, and perhaps been able to, at the very least, think about EVs in a slightly more open-minded way. I guess it's worth kind of extending an invite. If there are, I'm sure we do have many of our listeners that perhaps want to explore that option. They're thinking, they've perhaps been on the cusp for a while, thinking, oh, maybe I do want to explore this EV world. If they want to take advantage of GridServe services, what's the best way of doing that? Where do they start?
Yeah, so we have a website, gridserve.com. I think we're all over social, all over the social channels. So yeah, please just reach out to us. We have a really cool team of leasing experts that can advise a consumer, they can advise fleet, they can advise employers to adopt a salary sacrifice scheme. So whatever the need is, just get in touch.
Perfect. So if you want to, bully your employer into getting a salary sacrifice scheme and get yourself into a Porsche Taycan, like I'm just about to do right now, give these guys a call. It sounds like, what have you got to lose?
Awesome.
thank you both so much. Thank you.
Cheers,
for giving me, welcoming into this amazing building, giving us a quiet corner of your space. It's been amazing to... great to see you, John, and great to have you back on the podcast.
Congratulations on the house, by the way.
Oh,
get that one quiet.
I know, yeah. There's certain things
that's big news.
Certain things I don't shout about on socials, but we did. Yeah, bought a house. Woo! Just need to get a fast charger installed at home, and then we've got it all.
We can sort you out, don't worry.
Absolutely.
Perfect. You heard that, listeners, yeah? great to see you, John. Great to see this is flourishing. I have great confidence that GridServe is going to be moving forward with you, doing what you do for them. Likewise for you, Rob. I think this is it's been great. It's great to get your intel and get an understanding of how this works from a consumer's point of view. And I hope that at least a small percentage of our listeners have gone, actually, yes, I'm going to pick up the phone. And if you do, tell them where you found out. Tell them you heard them on the Driven Chat podcast. And I'm not saying you're going to get anything in benefit for that, but it'd just be nice to know that it's worked. It's always great to hear when these things work out the way we hope they do. For now, I will say thank you so much, John. Thank you so much, Rob. It's been great to talk to you. I've no doubt that the future will see us having more conversations, perhaps as times are changing, as it's ever evolving. We'll have catch-up sessions on what's changed, what's new, what can I bully my employer into allowing me to have next, that sort of thing. I think that's what we need to do. So this has been great. As for you, dear listener, thank you ever so much for joining us once again. If you would like to show your gratitude and your thanks for this episode, you can do so by leaving us a nice review wherever you're listening to this particular episode. They do wonderful things for us and for the algorithm that nobody understands, regardless of whether they tell you they do or they don't, because it's complete nonsense. But nice reviews make us feel nice, so that's always good and much appreciated. Don't forget, you can see everything that we do, driven.site, and our social feeds at Driven Chat as well. Scroll down to the show notes below and you'll see all the social links for GridServe, as well as the website that we've mentioned as well. So all the links through there, we've made it nice and easy for you. Just scroll down, have a click, and you'll be able to go through and explore your potential new world of electric motoring. How exciting. Thank you both, and thank you, dear listener, and we shall speak to you again in about a week's time.
The Driven Chat podcast, powered by Paramex Digital.
Oh, wow. You've made it to the end, the very end. And it's John Markar here again, reminding you that this podcast, the Driven Chat podcast, has now run its course and has come to an end. To find the new format, search the Driven podcast in your preferred podcast app, or head on over to the website, driven.site, to find some quick and easy links through to the new episodes in the new formats on your preferred apps. Thanks. Bye.